So just imagine every time, well, most of the times in this sermon, when I say we, I'm talking about me. Maybe you're included in that. Maybe. But I'm just saying we so I don't feel quite so guilty myself. But we, right, we all know somebody that came to work at 5 o'clock from our gospel, right? We all know somebody who never earned what they got, never deserved what they were given. We know someone who doesn't really deserve that job. They don't deserve that promotion. They didn't earn that raise. They shouldn't get that recognition. Because we work longer. We work harder. We're smarter. We do the job better. But in these instances, we all know those people for whom that made no difference in the world. So I think more often than not, we, or at least I, again, view the world and ourselves and others through the lens of fairness. Right? Through the lens of fairness instead of grace. Through the lens of fairness instead of generosity. We tend to view ourselves not in our relationship with God, and we don't view ourselves just as individuals, but we view ourselves in comparison to others. We'll talk about it in a little bit, but I think that's the exact opposite of how God views us and how God views the world. But we can't help it. We've been taught from an early age that fairness matters. Watch a bunch of children play, or come to my house and watch my two kids play, at least. And it won't be long before you hear one of them yell out, "That's not fair." It's not fair that my 9-year-old gets to do things that fourth graders get to do, and my second grader can't because second grade doesn't do it. Somehow that's my problem, and that's not fair. But we're taught from an early age, fairness matters. But it's not just children, right? At least not in my case. Adults, we want fairness as well. And I think I like fairness, maybe you like fairness, because it gives me some semblance of order, of predictability, of control, of hierarchy. Even if it is a false assurance of those things. But fairness, we think, is based on what we deserve, how hard we work, what we can achieve, and the ways you behave. Things we control can lead to fairness. Because we live in a wage-based society. I'm not talking about income and salaries, but I'm talking about how we view the world. We live in a wage-based society. We earn what we get. Good things, bad things. We live in a society that tells us that we deserve the consequences of our actions, good or bad. But then we have those situations in which goodness and grace and generosity overcome this sense of fairness. We have one of those in today's parable. And I'd argue that today's parable suggests that fairness and grace, that wages and generosity stand in opposition to one another. The generosity discussed in our parable today is dangerous, I think, because it flips our worldview on its head. It reverses business as usual. So the last will be first, and the first will be last, we hear today. That's not how a wage-based society is supposed to work. That's not how my neatly ordered worldview shows itself. My worldview says that the last are last and the first are first because of what they've done and what they've achieved. But our understanding of fairness, however, doesn't seem to have much priority or any sway in the kingdom of heaven, where generosity is the rule, not the exception. So when we're talking about the generosity of God, I think we're talking about grace. I mean, that's the ultimate generosity of God. And God's generosity, God's grace, looks beyond our productivity, looks beyond our appearance, it looks beyond how we dress, how we act, it looks beyond our race or our gender, our sexuality, our accomplishments. God's grace looks beyond our failures. Thanks be to God, right? The grace of God recognizes there's more to us and there's more to who we are than what we can accomplish or what we look like or how we behave. This wage-based lie reveals human effort, where grace reveals the goodness of God. Wages make distinctions and separations. Grace seeks unity and inclusion. Wages are based on merit, but grace just happens. And grace reminds us daily that we are not nearly as self-sufficient or deserving or independent as we like and how society tries to tell us we are. And so I think one of the tragedies of this worldview, of this wage-based lie, is that it blinds us to the generosity and the presence of grace in our lives and the lives of others. It separates us from others. It isolates us away from others. And I think that's what happened to the folks in our parable from today. Particularly those hired at 6 a.m. They worked the whole day, and at the end of the day, they saw themselves as different and more deserving than those hired later. They grumbled against the landowner, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, but you have made them equal to us." Somehow it wasn't their effort that made them equal, it was something else. But the truth is, I think they aren't that different from one another. Neither group owned the vineyard. Both groups waited for a job. Both groups stood outside waiting for a landowner to drive by and hire them. Both groups were chosen. Both groups were invited in. Both groups worked what they were asked to work. They did what they were asked to do. Through no effort of their own, other than a landowner who stopped by and hired them. And I think it's important to note that those first hired didn't have any issues at all with the wages they were to receive. Those first hired had no problem with their contract until they saw what someone else was getting. Their agreement between them and the landowner was fine. It was what they agreed on until they saw what someone else received. In that moment, it wasn't just between the workers and the landowner. It wasn't just between what they thought they should receive and what the landowner was willing to give them. The trouble here happened when it became a comparison game. The trouble started with envy and jealousy. Showed up. Jealousy is one of those primal emotions, I think, that shows up in our earliest texts. Cain's jealousy over Abel's sacrifice led to the first murder. Joseph's brothers sell him into slavery because they're jealous of his status. It's something that showed up from the earliest traditions of our faith. And for us, it shows up as early as we can remember, right? Think back to the first time you remember being jealous. Maybe someone else got the new toy. Maybe someone else got picked for the team ahead of you. Maybe someone else had a fruit roll-up at lunch and you just had a thing of vanilla pudding. So I venture to say that a good portion of the world's problems have come about because of envy and jealousy and our preoccupation with what other people have that we don't. This problem shows itself on a global scale where poverty, hunger, access to medical care, clean water, they all have their roots in a scarcity mentality. The jealous guarding of resources. There's enough food in the world for everyone to have something to eat. But some people eat too much and some people have none. This lie attacks on a personal level as well. Infidelity, covetousness, bullying, all of those have their roots in our incessant primal need to compare ourselves to others and show ourselves to be better. So perhaps the cure for this problem, this jealousy, this envy, is grace. And when we receive this grace from God, it turns into something else in our own lives. It turns into generosity. So this wage-based life, this wage-based lie of jealousy and envy, it makes us think in zero-sum terms. If someone else has something, by definition, that means I can't have it, right? And so we must feel envious. I say we, remember, I'm talking about me. I'm just trying to make myself feel better. When someone else has something, a lot of times we start to get jealous. But generosity begins to expose this lie of zero-sum thinking. A generous heart rejoices at the good things others receive. And this joy leaves no room for jealousy to strike. Someone else got the new toy when we were children. I rejoice that they are so happy. Someone else got picked to play for the team ahead of you. Well, that boy was having a hard day, and this gave them something to smile about. Someone else had that fruit roll-up while you were stuck at the lunch table with a lousy vanilla pudding. I'm actually not sure what to say about that one, because my generosity only extends so far. Can tell my elementary school lunches have left a mark in my life. But you get the idea, hopefully. We get the idea. Generosity flips this lie on its head. So this week, I invite you to start actively combating this wage-based lie of jealousy and envy that we've all had since childhood. Ask God for the strength to practice generosity. Ask God for the strength to rejoice at the fortunes of others, to share the joy in others' triumphs, and to bear with them in the pain of their loss as well. Don't let this envy, don't let this jealousy cut you off from one of the greatest gifts God has given each of us. Grace. This gift that we fail to receive so much of the time. This gift, this grace, is the joy made manifest by God's love connecting each of us one to another. Where jealousy and envy seek to separate and divide us, God's grace seeks to unite us. This gift is the capacity to rejoice with others. This gift is a heart overflowing with generosity. So again, I'm saying we when I mean me. So can we do this? Hopefully y'all can. I have little doubts about myself. But let's try to do this. Let's call out the lies of jealousy and envy in our own lives. And let's start living this grace-filled, gracious life. Amen.